Quick word of warning, there is a little bit of language here. So if you are driving, you know, six kids to soccer practice, may want to pop in the earbuds. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And I have got a different episode for you. I'm guessing you have never heard an episode like this, at least on an e-commerce related style podcast. I have been, as a quick little roundabout intro into this, I've done a little bit of studying, and I've been convinced that eating meat isn't necessarily a bad thing, or at least as bad as people say. But if you are going to eat meat, you want to try to get the highest quality meat you can get your hands on, because just some of the ways that meat is raised these days is kind of rough. And I heard about this company called North Bridger Bison in the Bridger Mountains north of Bozeman, Montana, from my good friend Jake Cook, who lived next door to them. Well, next door is maybe generous. There's a lot of land out there. Lived adjacent to them, and got to become good friends with the owners. And so I said, "Man, this is fascinating. We'd love to get to know them." And also, my daughter is someone who wishes she was born 200 years ago on the prairie, living a homesteader life. And she heard about this, and we also were doing this. Rather, Jake and Lee were helping set this up, so she could see this bison farm because it was something that really appealed to her. Anyway, we were able to make it happen, and I had such a fascinating time sitting down with Matt Skoglund, who's the owner. He runs the bison ranch with Sarah, his wife, and his family. And so in today's episode, I sit down with Matt and Jake, and we talk about how a lawyer from the city comes out to Montana and starts a bison ranch. We talk about the business. We talk about the e-commerce element, how he raises beef differently, some of the challenges. It's such a unique business model. And then after that, wrap that up, we actually go out into the field on a bison harvest to harvest an animal. It's pretty interesting. So you can come along for that part as well. Anyway, such an interesting, unique, different experience. So much respect for what Matt and Sarah are doing. And I hope you find it interesting, both from just thinking about where food comes from a business perspective. It's just got a lot of cool angles on it. And I hope you enjoy it. We'll get into it right after this. It is incredibly hard to trust reviews these days. Every restaurant on Yelp is 4.6 out of 5 stars. You get on Twitter and you find out the people promoting and advocating for certain apps end up, actually are investors, and they just don't disclose it. It's really hard to know what's real and what's spun. And that's why E-Commerce Fuel is so unique and valuable. It's a group of 1,200 vetted 7 and 8 figure owners with zero agenda apart from your success and connecting with one another. No one's pitching you. There's no thinly veiled affiliate links, just operators sharing their unfiltered opinions. Just this morning in our forums, there's a couple of threads that popped up. One about a popular landing page service with half a dozen members warning people to steer clear. Another member recommending a shipping auditing service that saved them over $200,000 last year. And we take all these reviews over the decade we've been in existence, and we compile them into a review directory that has over 20,000 SaaS and agency reviews. So if you want to cut through the spin and the hype and learn from other store owners with zero agenda, check us out. You can learn more and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Can you kind of set the stage? Because obviously people are listening to this. Can you set the stage and try not to be modest, because I know you are, but like, what do you wake up to? We're sitting here looking south, pretty spectacular view. Kind of set the stage for us here in your place.
Yeah. So we are out here in Shields Valley. Kind of northeast of Bozeman a little bit. For those of you that ski, we're about 20 minutes north of Bridger Bowl. When we first were interested about moving out here, gosh, almost 14, 15 years ago, the Shields Valley just kind of blew our minds. And we got acquainted with North Bridger Bison through Instagram. So I just think through word of mouth and hearing about it and started following it. And we were like, man, wouldn't it be cool if we had neighbors that were bison ranchers?
Was this before you bought this place?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So yes, we were super keen to, kind of get to a more rural place. I grew up in rural Wyoming, and so it has a lot of wind and sagebrush, which feels like home to me. So
yeah. You were just saying your Wi-Fi password is, I love wind.
Yeah. So we kind of moved out, and I think right when we were kind of in the process, we ran into Matt, and we were like, one time downtown.
No, it was... You reached out very
that's right. Yes, I'm sorry.
Graciously to see if we wanted to be a part of a, you know, case study for your Montana State class.
Thank you. Yes. And I said, about, yes.
Heck yeah, that sounds awesome. And then when we were getting to know each other through that, you mentioned you guys were considering moving out here. And then yes, there was the, we hadn't met in person. And so we'd been on Zooms and talked this and that. And then one day downtown Bozeman, I saw Jake and Lee crossing the street and I was like, oh my God, there's Jake and Lee. And I scared the living shit out of them because I like ran up and I was like, Jake and Lee. And they're like, oh my God. And anyways, yeah, that's when we met.
And now your neighbors, I mean, you probably, what is it? A couple miles up the road north?
Maybe. Yeah. So our like property starts a mile at the most.
Yeah, a mile, yeah. Okay.
And then our house is a little over a mile and a half north of here.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, it's, I mean, from a scenery perspective, it's, you mentioned North Bridger Bowl, Shields Valley, for people who aren't from the area. I mean, you've got, I look out the right window, you've got beautiful, spectacular Bridger Mountains. I look out the left, you've got the crazy mountains out there. It's about as beautiful country as you can get. Pretty amazing place to live, to ranch. It's spectacular. Before we get into your story,
oh yeah,
I'd love to hear, you went on a Knowles trip when you were 15.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was pretty formative for you. Big and time. Maybe setting kind of some of the trajectory of what you went through. I had some, resonated with me because I spent a couple of summers working for Outward Bound. It like changed my life.
Yeah.
So I'm curious for you, like what, how did that trip kind of impact you and kind of set your trajectory going forward?
Yeah. So, you know, ever since I was a little kid, absolutely loved nature and the outdoors, you know, born and raised in suburban Chicago, you know, not the wildest place. But, you know, the but to that but is that we grew up, our backyard abutted a forest preserve, which had a creek flowing through it, and spent, you know, countless hours in that forest. And I know it had a huge impact on me. Went to camp in northern Wisconsin a couple times and went on canoe trips and loved it. And then just was craving to do something like bigger. So went on a month-long Knowles trip in the Lemhi Range in Idaho. Yeah, just had a massive impact on me personally. You know, one, just the confidence it gives you in life, and then the outdoor skills it gives you. And then just fell so hard for the Northern Rockies and the ecosystem and big mountains. And so, yeah, that was when I was 15 years old and just like really stuck with me. And I mean, to this day, I still bore my family telling them about our Knowles trip. I really do. I'm like, I wore one t-shirt for a month. And, you know, so, yeah.
No, I'm the same way. I like, if you ask my kids like about dad's experience driving the big white trucks in the mountains, they'll kind of be like, yeah, we've heard the stories, right? Like, yeah, it sticks with you. Lemhi, is that like around Mackay, like where Mount Borah is? Is that that range? Or?
I honestly, sadly, I have not been back.
Yeah.
You know, I flew into Idaho Falls and then we got dropped off somewhere. And then 30 days, we got picked up somewhere, spent the night in Driggs and flew home. And so, yeah, I've, you know, Google mapped the Lemhi Range, but I can't remember exactly where in Idaho it was.
Yeah, well, no worries.
I
grew up there, so I should know it more than you who spent 30 days there. So that's 15-year-old Matt.
Yeah.
You know, fast forward to today, you got a family, you've got this bison ranch. How does a guy who grew up in Chicago, and at one point you were a lawyer,
right,
go and with no, to my knowledge, ranching experience at all, how do you go from that background to, you know, owning and running a bison ranch in Montana? That's a pretty unique jump, maybe unique, individually unique in America. I don't know.
Yeah. So, you know, it starts with that love of nature. Like ever since I was a little kid, just loved the outdoors, loved nature, loved watching nature documentaries. In high school, fell hard for fly fishing. And that was my gateway drug into conservation. I was introduced to hunting in college, and I just loved living in a rural area where you had immediate access to the outdoors. It was just a whole completely new experience for a kid from suburban Chicago. And I knew I wanted that in my life. Like that's ultimately what I wanted. The two reasons I went to law school were that one, every town needs a lawyer. And so, you know, I could be a lawyer in Montana potentially. And then a dream of being an environmental lawyer. So practiced in Chicago for a few years after law school, which I knew wasn't for me. And then Sarah and I, we got married, quit our jobs, moved to Bozeman in 08, And I did environmental policy work for the NRDC for 10 years. And the big issue I worked on was bison. And just, environmental policy work is so important, but it's a slog. And for me, I just got burned out and just was sick of it. And I was really craving to do something entrepreneurial. And I had different ideas, and they're either bad ideas, or if it was a good idea, I chickened out. And then we had two kids along the way. I hated work travel and was just really craving to do something entrepreneurial. And then also like land-based, conservation-based, and tangible. Like that was super important to me. And then very broadly defined, you know, I wanted to do something that made the world a better place. And I read about bison ranching, didn't take it seriously at first. Cause I was like, I'm from suburban Chicago. Like I can't be a rancher, but it just was like kicking around my brain. I was like, God, I feel like there's something there. And then I read this book, Buffalo for the Broken Heart by Dan O'Brien, who started Wild Idea Buffalo in South Dakota and is a hero of mine. And in that book, I read about the modern day, he pioneered the modern day field harvesting of bison. And that was when that was the light bulb moment of like, I didn't know this existed. That's the way to do it. It's time to get serious. And then I shit you not, like January 2018, I knew enough to type into Google bison ranching consultant. I'm not exaggerating.
ChatGPT, how do I start a bison ranch?
And met this amazing guy, Roland Cruz, who's we emailed yesterday. He's still a close friend. And we met for lunch in Bozeman, and I was telling him my story, and he kind of cut me off and said, listen, you should come to my holistic management workshop on a bison ranch. And I took it both as, one, this would be very beneficial for you, and two, as a test, like, are you a dreamer or are you serious? Like, are you wasting my time or are you serious? Went back, talked to Sarah, you know, working for an organization, your vacation time is very precious. And Sarah was like, you gotta go. You don't know where it could lead you. And I went and like fell hard for it and then came back and we really got serious, put a business plan together. Over time, as you get older, you know, like your backbone just gets stronger. Yes. I was about to turn 40 and, ultimately, like we'd put so much into it and I could see it. And the risk of not doing it became greater than the risk of doing it. We were like, we have to do this. Like we might fail like epically, but we got to try. That was the piece that got us to like jump off the cliff.
I think about most people listening to this are primarily digital entrepreneurs, like e-commerce, some realm related to the online world. And granted, a lot of them have inventory, but the thing is, you can scale that up as demand. Even, you know, anyone listening is probably spitting out their coffee laughing because if you're growing really fast, you have horrific inventory and cash flow issues. But in the early days, you can kind of start with, you need some money, but you don't need an insane amount of money. But if you're going to start a ranch, like capital intensive, right? You got to go buy a bunch of land. You got to buy a bunch of animals right out of the gates. How did you... did you finance that with savings, with investors, like, and maybe speak a little bit to how you thought through that on the financial side, but also on the, you know, the mindset side, because you're really taking a big plunge there.
It's incredibly capital intensive. I guess we'll start with the mindset side first, because that was easiest. You know, so when this went into like real serious mode was like January, February, March, 2018, Bozeman was growing. We never could have predicted what we've seen in the last 6 years with COVID and the show Yellowstone and just the explosion of growth out here. What gave us peace of mind was that we felt that obviously you're taking various risks in doing this. And we felt what gave us peace of mind was that by buying land, like that's not going to decrease in value. So even if we fall on our faces and fail, mm-hmm. we can sell that asset and we think it'll probably just keep appreciating. So that was the mindset, was like, yes, there's a lot of risk, but owning a big chunk of land 30 miles from Bozeman, you're that's a good investment. And then how we financed it, you know, yeah, I haven't thought about it in a while, but it's something that it was surprisingly hard. Like, you know, we weren't 23 right out of college. Like I thought that the land we found, we looked at one piece of land in person. Like we kept looking online to do our due diligence, but nothing online even merited a visit. It was either too expensive, wrong place. So we looked at the land we looked at, it was that or nothing. It was a needle in the haystack. It was, in my opinion, it was like significantly underpriced even in 2018. And so we just thought, we're like, man, we were talking earlier, like we bought our house in downtown Bozeman at the bottom. It was all of a sudden worth a lot of money. We had great credit. We had, you know, I had a good salary, good career, like no debt. Like we thought banks would like want to, you know, kind of, oh yeah, we're all, and like the asset, right? Like this appreciating asset. And it was incredibly hard. But ultimately what we did, we got a land loan from a local bank. And then we got two different loans from friends and family. And then we got a loan, one more loan from a guy in the Bison world. So it was all debt. So it was, I've been really interested in entrepreneurship and small businesses for a long time. So I knew that Sarah and I, we wanted to be 100% owners of the business. So we were going to go full debt route. But yeah, it was hard to pull it all together.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are increasingly familiar with kind of industrialized ag and how a lot of meat comes and is grown. How do you do things differently out here?
Multiple ways. I think keeping it short and then fire away with follow-up questions. I mean, ranchers in Montana are amazing and they are doing so much for the landscape, the environment, rural communities. So I think when we talk about industrial ag, which I can't stand, it's important to point out that that's not Montana ranchers. That's the, you know, industrial hell you see from these massive international corporations that run huge factory farms for hogs and massive packing plants and those sorts of things. So I think that there's a very important, you know, and like those big companies are run to the detriment of, just talking about this yesterday, it's like they sell meat for very cheap prices at Walmart, but the costs are incredible. And the costs that they push out onto us and society, you know, exploiting humans for labor, climate, poisoning water, destroying wildlife habitat, pollinator habitat, you know, their ecological wasteland. There's just on and on and on and on. And to the detriment of Montana ranchers, because they want to pay Montana ranchers as little as possible for their animals.
Quick question. When you said attracted all this except for the human labor, when you say exploiting human labor, what do you mean?
The big meat packers are known for bad labor practices and exploiting migrant labor, including child labor. Like they've been busted for having like 13-year-old kids working in their plants. So, you know, I think a lot of times we talk so much about like there's such a focus on like the negative environmental impacts, but I think it's important to also, more important to talk about the negative human impacts of these places.
It's been funny. I've dove a little bit more into like diet and nutrition over the last year or two. There's so much controversy around meat. And I feel like where I've come to is like meat can be a very healthy and important part of a good diet. But on the other side, it depends on what kind of meat you're eating too. So on my side, I eat more meat than I did a couple of years ago by a good margin, but I also am way more conscious about eating, like spending money on getting really good quality meat.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's great segue. And I couldn't agree more. I eat an insane amount of meat on a weekly basis. And I joke, like our kids eat so much bison that I'm pretty sure they're going to grow horns. To answer your previous question directly. So what we do, so one, we manage for biodiversity on our ranch. We want our ranch to be as biodiverse as possible, teeming with life, because one, we love biodiversity, full stop, and we're in the middle of an extinction crisis. And then two, the science is clear that the more biodiverse our ranch is, the more resilient it is, the more healthy and resilient our animals are, the healthier their meat is, and the healthier the people that eat their meat are. So, and what does that look like? We don't use any chemicals. We don't use herbicides, pesticides. There's a great regenerative farmer in Georgia. Will Harris, White Oak Pastures. He's like a goat in our world. He has a great, he's got this thick Southern drawl. And he says, he's like, herbicide, pesticide, fungicide, all various forms of homicide, because it's just killing your soil. So we don't use any chemicals. We don't plow. We don't till. We're building topsoil every year. We're sucking carbon out of the atmosphere and storing it in the ground. Our ranch is protected under a conservation easement. It'll never be developed. We're the first Audubon certified bird-friendly bison ranch in Montana. Our ranch provides shit ton of habitat for wildlife, songbirds, waterfowl, pollinators. And then you have these animals, bison, with these magical stomachs that don't just exist out here, but thrive in this landscape. We run it as one herd year round. We don't wean. We let mom take care of that. We really try to run a no stress operation. When I move the bison, I just moved the bison into a new pasture last night. I pull them. I don't push them. So I go out in my side by side. I get their attention and they're like, oh, here's the idiot with the beard. Let's follow him. And they follow me into the next pasture, close the gate. And then as you're going to see in a couple hours, when it's time to kill one, instead of, you know, putting him on a truck and shipping him to a slaughterhouse, which for bison, it's just super high stress. There's an ethical and humane component to that. And then that stress also negatively impacts the meat. So instead of doing that, I just, as you'll see in a couple hours, drive out. There's the herd. They're all together. Jake's been with me for several field harvests. There's a bison from 10 yards away, literally with his friends and family, grass in his mouth. And it's a headshot from 10 yards with a copper bullet. Boom. Just instant lights out. So, and we're super transparent about it on our website, on Instagram, because, you know, in the meat world, the killing part of it and all of that is like hit, it's just completely hidden in like a dark corner. And we are all about transparency and connecting people to where their food comes from. And we ultimately think that like our whole process, I just use the word beautiful over and over. I just think it's a beautiful, beautiful process from start to finish, from like the bison to the field harvest to the steak that's on your plate. And so, yeah, we just, you know, I've told Jake, like the way we run our ranch and feel about it is that like, if 60 Minutes called me right now and said, we're 5 miles away, I want to do a story on you, my answer would be fantastic. Come on out. We'd love to show it to you. So we're just all about transparency. And we really strive to provide like the absolute healthiest, most delicious red meat you'll ever taste.
The conservation easement is something I think is cool. Like that's one thing I've appreciated a lot about Bozeman. And I think your wife, Sarah, is on the board of GVLT, right?
She is, yeah.
Which is super cool. For people who aren't familiar with it, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you understand better than I do, it's this idea of if you have a piece of land, so much of land in the Bozeman Valley has been developed because you have farmers, you have ranchers, mostly farmers out there in the valley, and the economic value of the land just goes through the roof when you look at what a developer would pay for it. And like, I'm not anti-development. We need development in Bozeman. Like you need places for people to live. I wasn't the first one here and I'm glad I get to live here. But there's also a ton of value in having open space for so many different reasons. And so conservation easement, a group like GVLT will come in and say, hey, your land is worth $2 million on the market if you just sold it to a developer. You can keep it. We'll pay you, say, $1 million, but you have to write legally that you will never develop this land in the future. And so they get some liquidity. The public gets to enjoy the open space. There's natural benefits as well. And I don't know, I think it's such a cool public-private model that makes a ton of sense.
I couldn't agree more with everything you said, including the first part about not being anti-development. I mean, we have an affordable housing crisis in Bozeman and across the country. So, but I just think, I love seeing the developers that are infilling in Bozeman and building vertically and like, we just have to accept that. And I hate seeing farmland plowed up. So basically I've been a conservation easement nerd for over 20 years. In law school, the journal I was on, my note, which is like your thesis that I wrote over 20 years ago, was on conservation easements. And so, yeah, you explained it perfectly. They're totally voluntary. So, you know, farm or ranch, completely voluntary. And you work with a land trust here, GVLT, and you put together a document, a deed that controls the property going forward. And there's an insane amount of flexibility in that document. Like each ranch, it's uniquely tailored to each ranch, and you can have multiple building envelopes. You know, it's basically, I guess, the more restrictive it is, the more, the higher value the easement is, because you're giving up more, right? And then the less restrictive it is, the less valuable the easement would be. But it's uniquely tailored, you know, to each ranch or farm. Yeah, it's just like win-win across the board. We went through the whole thing. And then you have a formal real estate closing. Like you go to a closing office and sign the deed. And so, yeah, so our ranch forever, it can never be developed. And we got a nice check from it, which was wonderful. And yeah, it provides incredible public benefits from open space, wildlife habitat. I mean, all of those things. Yeah, just huge fans of GVLT and other land trusts, conservation easements. Yeah, they're just a really unique, powerful tool to protect land.
Let's kick it on the business side.
Yeah.
Because you got to make money. You know, it's not amazing. You handle these awesome bison in this beautiful place, but it's got to pay for itself, right?
Exactly.
So how does the business model work? What percent is wholesale? Are you selling to restaurants or places around the valley or throughout Montana? What percent is like direct to consumer through your website? How does that break down?
Yeah. So our business model is extremely simple. We sell 100% direct to consumer by the quarter half whole bison. That's it. So we don't sell to a restaurant. You can't find our meat at a grocery store or a butcher shop or anything. It's 100% direct to consumer. The minimum order is a quarter bison, which is usually around like 85 pounds of bison meat. And it's less than you'd think. Like you'd go through it pretty quickly. So yeah. So our customers place a deposit with us. I'm knocking on wood, always have a little waiting list. And then I field harvest year round. And so yeah, it's quarter half whole bison and then field harvest. And then I'd say about 60% of our customers are in Montana. And then the other 40% are all over the country. So we ship all over on Mondays for Wednesday arrival. And then we really try to provide a unique customer experience. So like I field harvested a bison yesterday, and that happened to be a whole bison for one customer. And I sent her pictures of the morning last night and a little write-up about the day. And then when we deliver or ship, we include a tote bag, some cooking tips, a couple stickers, and then a sprig of sagebrush from the ranch with some bison hair tied around it. Because we just really believe in connecting people to where their food comes from, transparency. And again, it's like, it's a beautiful process. And we want people to be able to experience some of that beauty.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to David, who's the owner of dropguys.com, where they make super heavy duty phone cases. He's a newer member to e-commerce fuel, and here's what he had to say about his experience with our vetted private community for 7- and 8-figure owners.
My favorite aspect of e-commerce fuel is the community. The reason being is because having gone through the membership application process, I know that everyone is verified, everyone is legit, and everyone's very transparent. Whereas on other communities, such as Reddit, Twitter, you don't really know how much authority they have, how much success they have had, and how much weight to give to their opinions. Whereas on e-commerce fuel, you know they're tried and tested. And you can act on their advice with confidence.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show.
So, man, see, that surprised me. I thought it would have been 70-80% wholesale, and the DTC, like the direct consumer, would have been a side thing. So that seems like a much harder route to go starting out. It just seems a wholesale route would be, and you've got buyers, you've got, you know, grocery stores, you've got restaurants in town where you could go in, show them. And why did you pick the DTC route? Because especially, I mean, long term, I think it makes a ton of sense.
And yeah.
But starting up, that must have been brutal. Was it brutal from an advertising perspective? Like, how did you, why did you pick it and how did you get make that work?
So we picked it because, you know, we, in researching it and knowing very little 6-7 years ago, I mean, the little we knew is that if you sell direct to consumer, there's no middle person taking a cut. There's no distributor. So you're going to be able to get the most bang for your buck. As first generation ranchers, we already talked about all the debt we took on to do this. Like, we got to make this thing work financially and we got to bake as much money as we can on each animal. And so, and then also from a regulatory standpoint, field harvesting is different. And so, and field harvest is so important and foundational to us that that's all we've ever done and all we'll ever do. We will never cut corners on that. And so there's, without getting too in the weeds here, there's three different classifications of meat. There's federally inspected meat, state inspected meat, and custom exempt. And when you sell by the quarter half whole bison, it's under the custom exempt model. It's a little looser way to do things. Like, you don't have to have an inspector present when you kill the animal, those sorts of things. And so it was an easier way for us to be up and running field harvesting. You can field harvest bison under inspection, but there's just more hoops to jump through and more things needed. So we thought we'd start with, you know, direct to consumer quarter half whole bison, and then switch to, or I guess add field harvesting under inspection so we could sell the restaurants and sell the caterers and sell smaller portions. But, you know, over time, our customer base has just grown and grown for the quarter half whole bison. And then COVID definitely helped. Like, when people went to the store and saw shelves that were empty, you know, all of a sudden, literally meat, all of a sudden meat processing was on the cover of the New York Times and the lead story in the evening news, which is crazy. And so so this buying direct from farmers and ranchers really exploded. But no, to your question, I vividly remember when we opened for business, I think it was in May of 2019, you know, we had friends and family lined up, not literally, but people obviously knew what we were doing, were cheering us on, probably similar to a lot of other entrepreneurs. And so the day that I sent out the email that we're open for business, we got a bunch of orders right away from friends and family, which I'll never forget. It just meant the world to us. Funny, one of my buddies was the first order, and I still call him number one. And my dad, who passed away this past winter, for the last 6 years, he was pissed that he was not number one. So it's kind of funny.
Did you give him a hard time about that? Be like, Dad, I thought you loved me. Yeah. Man.
He called me, and like, it was just like, my dad was, Jake knows all about it, 'cause Jake and Lee have been so wonderful talking about passing of my dad, and Lee lost her dad a couple years ago. It was just so funny because whenever I sent the email, you know, it was like 4 minutes later, my dad called me and I'm like, hey, he goes, what the hell? He goes, who the hell beat me? He just like right away was so pissed. And so, yeah, my buddy, Brian McCurdy, number one, bunch of orders right away. And then crickets. And when I say crickets, I mean crickets.
Oh, I think a lot of people listening can relate to that. Everyone listening, myself included, Jake, I'm sure yourself included, first client or sale, whatever it is, you remember where you were when it happened, like what the room smelled like.
Yeah. Yep.
It's crazy. But then it
just crazy. And then like, I mean, I look back, you know, because Jake and I have these brainstorming sessions, and Jake is a genius and has been invaluable in helping me think through the business and just open my eyes to things and make me learn things and think about things differently. It's honestly just been truly invaluable. The guy's a genius on a lot of levels. And I look back at what I was doing, you know, over, I guess, whatever, 5.5 years ago. And, you know, I went and got a bunch of posters blown up, and I was literally going around downtown Bozeman, putting them up in coffee shops, anywhere I could put them, just desperately hoping to get a sale. You know, we're really busy now. People are reaching out to visit the ranch and do this and do that. And like, someone was here yesterday, and it's like, the weeks are busy. Lots of people reaching out. And I remember that summer, it was basically like, I'd be sitting there and be like, you know, I'd yell like, hey, Sarah, we got an email. Oh my God, someone left us a voicemail. So it was truly crickets for a while. And then I think what happened is once our meat got out into the world, people were having barbecues. The meat, at the end of the day, Jake and I talk about this all the time. We opened the podcast talking about how beautiful it is here. You can have the most beautiful mountains, the most beautiful bison, the cutest kids, the greatest photos. But if your meat sucks, you're screwed. At the end of the day, when a customer buys a quarter bison and eats their way through it, that meat better like knock their socks off. And our meat does. And so I think people started sharing it at barbecues and people were like, whoa, like this is amazing. Where'd you get this? And they're like, oh, you got to call these guys North Bridger Bison. And it's just been slow growth since then. I think a lot of word of mouth, but yeah, it was 100% crickets for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah. I have talked about this on the podcast before, but the idea of a smaller but more durable business model, I think is like the future of what we do. Because advertising, a lot of people built businesses over the past 10 years. And again, you're unique, right? Like you do something quite a bit different from, at least on the product side, than a lot of people listening. But I think it still applies. So much harder to get attention. But if you have a great product and you build it over time, you can build something that is not going to be at the whims of these massive tech giants, right? And so, you know, you've done this the right way. And so you're going to have a business that is, you know, hopefully God willing, like durable for 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
That's the hope, you know? I mean, Jake and I were sitting on his porch Tuesday morning talking about all this. And, you know, for us, there's no exit plan. This is a lifetime plan. You know, the idea is just to keep building it, slow growth, never cutting corners, always maintaining that standard of excellence across the board. And I find it very exciting. It's very, yeah, it's just endlessly exciting, at times stressful. It's a roller coaster, but it's super exciting and just like really, I find like intellectually stimulating.
I'm just going to interject one thing. I think what's really fascinating about the MBB story is it's built on a story, right? And I think to Matt's point, people buy an emotion and they'll backfill with logic.
100%.
So you have this amazing story of bison on the land, and there's parts you'll see later today. It could be 1,000 years ago, just your view shed and what you're looking at. You just see bison and sagebrush and mountains, and like I could be 1,000 years ago, right? It's Lewis and Clark type views. But to Matt's point, when you get the bison and as a repeat two-time customer, soon to be three, because we eat it so fast, the quality is incredible. And I think when if you have ground beef from Walmart and you fry that up, you know what the skillet looks like at the end. It's pretty gross. And when you use MBB ground bison, for example, there's nothing in the skillet. I mean, it's so clean. It tastes so delicious. And that aside, that is a longer slow growth model. Because as we know in e-com, what was the playbook kind of pre-iOS was ramp it on Facebook, put a dollar in, get 4, 5, maybe 8, 10 bucks back, go, 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 go. And what MBB's done, if I can put my digital marketing hat on for a second, unbelievable, in my opinion. And we talk about this a lot. Like, I don't think Matt quite gives himself enough credit for this. This is done without paid media, just building a great product and telling great stories with Instagram and an email list on Squarespace, right? So not some super slick tech stack or crazy, TikTok influencers and things like that. And I think that is like unbelievable, because you just don't see people have that kind of grit. On top of, as hard as it is to launch any business, learning how to field harvest bison and work with a process. I mean, there's all these other pieces that I feel like 99.9% of people would have like thrown their hands up and quit. So yeah, so a tip of the hat to what Matt and Sarah did, because it's something very few could do or have the grit to keep going. So it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That means a lot coming from Jake.
Yeah. What is the hardest part of your business? Like when you think about the business model, especially on the business side, what's the most difficult part to make work?
So the ranching side, you nailed it earlier. That's the fun side, but you got to make this work. So there's the business side of it, our direct to consumer meat business. I'd say there's a few challenges there. One, we sell in bulk, and then another that's kind of tricky. It's a good problem to have, but a lot of people have become very interested in what we're doing, and we have like some super fans, and like I'm very grateful for it. But like, there's a lot of people that want to come see the ranch, and like trying to balance all. And it's typically in like 2 months. It's like mid June to mid July, and so trying to balance that with running the ranch side of things, running the business side of things, being a dad, being a brother and a son and a husband and a friend, and trying to stay sane through it all like that. Cause my instinct, I want to share it with everyone cause I'm so passionate about it, but I can't, you know, it's like, or at least I got to put some sideboards up so that I sleep and stay sane.
Man, if you're trying to sell a $100 product and someone wants to call and chat for 45 minutes. It just, it doesn't work. You can't make it work.
Right.
So having, trying to balance that, we want to be real with customers, but how do we also, we got to think about efficiency too and having a business actually streamlined. Your dad, you got two kids, a daughter and a son. As a dad and you and your wife, Sarah, how are you thinking about, I'm sure the ranch and this lifestyle plays into how you're raising your kids, but even beyond that, like, how are you trying to raise kids and what are some of the things you're really trying to be intentional about in raising your children?
My kids are the most important thing in the world to me by far. Like I, you know, on my gravestone, I hope it just says Matt was a good dad. Like it's just the most important thing to me. We don't hide anything. Like they're involved when we talk about the ranch and the business. It's funny. Our 10-year-old is like becoming, he's super interested in the business side of things.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like super interested in like marketing and like how it all works and who our customers are. We share the good and the bad. And then I guess so the intentional things are raising them close to the natural world with a deep love and reverence for the natural world, knowing where their food comes from. And then a big one for me is valuing and appreciating hard work, because it's a shit ton of work. And I guess lastly, because people always ask me, like, you know, if we want our kids to take over, and I've thought a lot about this, I really don't care. Like, we know that our ranch is protected from development forever, and we've built a strong enough business at this point that Northbridger Bison's gonna survive and go on. But I look at it like, I got to chase my dream, and I want my kids to get to chase their dreams, whatever that looks like. So there is zero pressure.
I love it. So people listening, love the story, love what you're doing, you know, sold on the meat quality. Best place to get it, northbridgerbison.com?
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, we're an e-commerce company. So northbridgerbison.com. So I'd say read through the website. And then if you have any questions about anything, I mean, even if it, you're like, man, should I really email them about this? Email.
You also have like the opportunity for people to come out and do something similar with a group of like 8 people.
Yeah.
Come to the ranch, experience this in person, and then be able to take home the bison that you've harvested, be able to eat that. And one, super cool experience. Two, and obviously it's got to be, you know, maybe not the best fit for every team or company, but if I had a bunch of people that were interested in this on a team, like I can't think of a cooler experience for a company, for a family especially, but for a company as like an entrepreneur to bring people. It just, I mean, who is going to, it's not something you get to do.
Right. No,
you know? It's super cool.
I so appreciate you mentioning that, because yeah, it's like that came from, you know, as I said, we're so proud of our process. We share it constantly. I mean, I posted photos last night of yesterday's field harvest. And so people really want to come see a field harvest. And so managing that is difficult. And when people come, they're just blown away, particularly people that don't hunt and have never experienced anything like this. It's just a very intimate, unique experience.
That's very cool. Well, thank you for making this happen. I can't wait to get out on the ranch and see the process. I know my daughter is also ecstatic to see it as well. So
no, thank you so much for having me on. I'm thrilled. And yeah, it's going to be a great day.
Yeah, it is. And congrats on building a great business. Like it's anyone listening, again, our audience is mostly kind of existing store owners and entrepreneurs, and it's a heck of a lot of work. And you've built something pretty amazing out here. Even, you know, just from having been out there, I didn't tell you once we creeped up your road once and kind of peeked in on, I don't think we're trespassing, it's a public road, but just off to the side, and it's just cool.
Yeah.
From the very limited I've seen and what Jake and Lee have said, and just all the snooping I've done in prep for this. But awesome. Yeah, man, congrats. You built something, you and your wife and your family built something amazing.
Well, so, that means a lot. So
yeah.
So well, cool. Well, thank you.
Yeah. And looking forward to harvesting this.
Yeah. Let's go do it.
So we're going to transition in just a second into the field portion where we actually go out onto Matt's ranch, harvest an animal. And when I say we, I'm using the word we very liberally here. What I mean to say is I stood back and watched while Matt did all of the hard work of this entire process, but took all of our 3 kids out for this process, which was pretty interesting. And you may be wondering what kind of animal takes his 3 kids out to watch an animal get, you know, shot and field dressed. And I would say, I think it's one, we gave them all the option to come or not come. They were all pretty interested in coming. But secondly, I think it's important for kids to see this kind of stuff. And I think not from a gruesome perspective, but from a life, from a natural perspective. And I think kids so much take the cues from the people around them about how to approach something. If the people and their parents around them are nervous and anxious and upset and filled with anxiety about something and fear, they're going to pick up on that. But if the parents are not and they're, you know, they're calm and they're explaining things and they're helping them deal with maybe any fears, of which we really didn't have a whole lot. We had a little bit of uncomfortableness at some points, but in general, you know, 5-10 minutes into the process after this animal was on the ground, the kids were surprisingly comfortable with it. Anyway, I think it's just a good lesson that kids are amazingly adaptable. They really pick up on our anxiety or lack thereof. And I think it's important for us to see where food comes from. I think it's important for kids too as well. So anyway, just a little note there I thought was kind of maybe worth mentioning on the kid side. Anyway, we're going to jump into the harvest section. If that's not your thing, thank you for listening so far. If it is, stick around. And I think it's just a really fascinating way that Matt has done this with so much integrity, intentionality, and respect for the landscape and the animals.
This is beautiful. Did you guys build this when you came
here? Yeah, so when we moved up here, we lived in this house. This was here. We had to fix it up a little bit, and we got money back from the seller to do it.
Yeah.
And we lived in there for almost 2 years. And then we sold our house in Bozeman to put the addition on.
Oh, cool.
So now we have some space, which is so nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Beautiful. You did a great job on the addition.
Thanks. Yeah, we're thrilled with it.
Should I load them up?
I'm gonna do it. Yeah.
All right. These are the microphones. Oh, yeah.
Sarah, children.
Okay, Bria Rose.
Dogs.
Theo. We're going to load up.
Is this where the buffalo roam?
Yep. This is where they roam. This is... So the ranch is... Yeah, it's on both sides of the road, and we have it cross-fenced into several different pastures, and the bison are currently, I moved them into this one pasture, that way.
Is it the brown one?
It's two over, so there's, this is a pasture, then the middle is a pasture, and then the next one over is where the bison are.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Can we see them or no?
Not right now.
We'll probably come up over and ride.
Yeah, no, thanks, Jake. We can leave it open. We're going to come out this way.
And you have a phone for pictures.
So we're going to go and we're going to field harvest.
I have a mountain for pictures.
And then we're going to field dress it up there somewhere.
So, Matt, you said you have about 150 mature bison up here and then like 500 younger ones?
No. So we have... long story short, including the calves born this year, there's 200 bison out there.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's all the stuff like up there that ram, like fluff.
Oh, and the visor?
Yeah.
Oh, bison hair and some sagebrush. This is the bison mobile.
I see that.
And a horn.
Yeah, this truck is, we got a Ford truck, flatbed on the back, which means there's no rails. You could just, you know, throw a ton of stuff back there.
And so right now our big bull, who you can see, he's kind of looking at us right in the middle. Yeah. He's like, notice when we get closer, he just turned his head. He'll bellow and you'll hear like this low, it almost sounds like a low guttural purr.
Oh, wow.
And he'll stick his tongue out. And so he's been a busy boy for the last 5 weeks.
What does that mean?
He's been breeding the females. Yeah. And he's 100% focused on breeding the females.
Wow.
And so he'll walk around with his tongue out going,
they aren't scared of you?
No, they know me. So there he is.
So
that's him. So he's a 7-year-old bull, just a beautiful specimen. Like, so as I was saying, you know, part of our whole thing is both transparency and connecting people where their food comes from and the customer experience. So I always take a few photos before I go out that I'll share with the customers tomorrow.
Matt, how do you pick which one to harvest? Is there a methodology
to it? Great question. So I know I'm killing a 2-year-old bull this morning. The short answer is the first one that provides the perfect shot. And the perfect, actually, Jake, you want to turn the truck off and pull the keys out? And so the perfect shot is a bison that's standing still, looking at me.
Why looking at you?
Because it's a headshot, and I shoot it like an inch above the eyes. And no bison in front of it, and no bison behind it. And so that's actually the hardest part. Sometimes, I always say, sometimes it takes 5 minutes, Sometimes it takes 55 minutes.
Some of them look like they're still shedding.
Yeah, some of them are still, they say like younger animals takes longer for some reason to shed their winter coats.
Yeah.
Like it's loose and off for some reason. You can see it dangling,
but
it's just not totally off yet. Okay. Headphones on, and I'll let you know when to plug your ears. Okay.
Okay.
All right, since they're all giving us space, you guys can come out if you like.
Cool.
Do you think it's safe?
I think so, yeah.
That's empty. I just don't like it. It's empty, but I just don't like a point of gun in it anymore.
Cool. Obviously.
Hold on, let me go up first.
Bria, really respectfully touch the mane on that thing. It's amazing.
Yeah, you can just like there.
Thank you for allowing us to.
Oh yeah.
This is amazing.
Whoa! That feels... The horn's so cool. I like the horn. It's kind of sad though too.
This is kind of a sober thing.
Yeah, it's a mix. Yeah. It's a whole bunch of things at once. You know, it's this beautiful animal that's now dead. But it lived an amazing life. It was born on the ranch, lived its whole life on the ranch, literally is standing here with its friends and family, grass in its mouth, and it was instant. It never felt a thing. So we're really happy that it died. You know, it died, and so there's definitely, there's all sorts of stuff that comes with that, and it's a heavy-duty thing. We don't take it lightly. The bison must really like you guys, because they... are giving us all this space, which they normally don't do, so this is nice.
That's cool. So do you dress it, you lift it up and then pull it somewhere else to dress it
somewhere else? Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So if you're listening, of course you can't see this, but the truck has a big, almost like a crane that comes down, these two big arms come down, and then he'll attach straps to the end of these two crane arms, put them onto the legs, and then he'll lift it up. Theo, back up. So he's lifting it up now, and it's pulling the entire bison feet up toward the sky and lifting it off the ground. Now the arms are spreading to kind of spread it out, and it lifts the bison up off the ground so that he can start moving it.
Now we're going to bleed it.
Right now?
Yeah, we just bleed it. It's better, just good for meat quality to just get all that, just to bleed it out.
How long does it take for the bison to bleed out?
5 minutes.
Oh, that fast?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you do it right away, and it's angled down like this. It bleeds out quickly.
Oh, you wash it out, right?
Eventually, yep. We take it, we're gonna gut it, and I take it to the processor. They skin it, and they do a really nice job. They wash it really thoroughly before it goes in for dry aging.
Dad, what's this?
That's his ear.
That's interesting.
It's really tough.
All right, should we go field dress this guy?
Yeah.
That's when we get we got it.
We got it here?
No, we're going to go to a different pasture. Okay. So hop back in the truck.
He's wondering if he can feel the tongue.
Of course.
Yeah.
You guys can feel anything you want. And just Matt. No.
Okay.
Just good old Matt.
Right. Oh, it feels
Do you feel crazy. The taste bud?
Yeah. Look at that thing. Oh, what a beautiful skull.
Wow. All right.
All right, time to chop the bison.
Yep. All right.
All right, Bree Rose, which one do you want to do?
Now, that part's the tricky part. I'm done, so you guys are going to do the rest of it. That was the deal, right?
Yeah. We're going to go have lunch, and Bree's going to finish
it off. I got a lawn chair and a six-pack of beer.
Bree'll do it.
That cavity is enormous. Is that the heart?
Yeah, they're so big.
Wow.
And just beautiful.
I'm amazed how much room is in there.
Oh, yeah, they're just...
Whoa, that's a heart?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. That can't be a heart.
That's gotta be five pounds, four pounds?
More than 5 pounds for sure.
Wow.
Close to 10.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So the liver's on this side. I always start on the other side. And I just put my hand back there and pull a little bit. There we go.
Wow.
Now we're going. Oh yeah. We're just gonna open it up and give you spoons.
Whoa.
Wow, grow out the grass. What happens if you do the intestine?
Oh, wow.
So there's a grass-fed bison.
Oh yeah, do you wanna take it?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That is,
look at that.
So if you're listening, you can't see it, it's this stomach is probably the size of a inner tube you'd float down the river, maybe a touch smaller. And you cut it open and it looks just like just wet grass that's been kind of digested and all smashed together. I mean, there's like 50, 60 pounds, 70 pounds of grass in there.
Probably closer to 30 pounds.
30 pounds?
But yeah, it's just wild. It's just the coolest thing. All right, I got gifts for my three bison scientists.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
This has been amazing.
Oh, here, we'll grab a...
I wish I had a picture of your face.
Mine's hurt.
Nope. That's
thank
super cool.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You guys, seriously, this is like the best Friday ever.
Want to extend a huge thank you to Matt, Sarah, and their kids, Greta and Otto, for having us out on their ranch, for sharing their life with us, for sharing some of the meat with us, and just the entire experience. So thankful to them. If you want to get your hands on some of this meat, and as you can tell, it's about as high quality and natural as it comes, northbridgerbison.com. You can head out there, learn more about the process, place an order, and that's everything you need, yeah, to get yourself set up with some. And also a big thank you to Jake and Lee Cook, who made this possible, not only arranged everything and made the introductions, but also, yeah, had us over afterwards for a big feast and a wonderful evening. So yeah, thank you both. You guys are great friends and appreciate all the love and hospitality. That's going to do it for this week. A big thank you to OneClick Upsell, who offers incredible upsell software to get more from every single customer and increase your average order value on your site. To make more money from the customers you already have, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And if you own a 7 or 8 figure store, you really should be a part of our private community and forums here at eCommerce Fuel, where you can connect with over 1,200 store owners just like you. We're so confident it'll be a game changer that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. If you don't see 10x your membership value in the first year, we'll refund you 100% of your membership fees plus toss in an extra $1,000 for the hassle. So you can learn more and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and look forward to seeing you again next Friday.